QuiteTheThingMedia.com. The network, without constraints.
Hi everybody, and welcome to part two of our six-part series on how to write a book. But before we get into it, I'd like to ask you to visit wrongtermmemory.com, scroll down to the bottom. There's a couple of buttons there and you can basically leave us a tip, and it would help us cover hosting costs, like cable ties and things like that cost money. Actually, we lose money making this every month. So any tip would help. Not a donation, we're not a charity. But Colin, how are you, mate?
I'm good. I'm wonderful, yeah. And I am sick to death of paying for those bloody cable ties. So yeah, by all means, please do get on that. Buy me a coffee link, etc. How are you, Jack? You all right?
Yeah, good, man. And Martin is back joining us again. So how are you, mate? Good?
Very well, mate. Thanks for having me back on.
And what are we covering? What are we covering in this part?
We're covering not a particularly sexy part of the process, but very important, which is the planning process, and kind of disabusing anyone of the notion that these things just kind of happen just in flights of fancy. You need to really have your structure in place before you even start writing the thing.
Yeah, so I suppose speaking about planning, a guy who had lots of time to plan a book was this, I don't know if you've heard of him, Hitler, he was called. He wrote a book called Mein Kampf back in the day, described basically as the most evil book in history. Its publication has been illegal and restricted in lots of countries, however, not illegal in Germany. Apart from its politics, the book has also been criticised basically for its writing style. And like I mentioned on the last show, one of my favourite things to do is get Martin to read reviews. It just comes across really smooth and dulcet. So you want to take a wee... even his pals were fucking listening to book, man.
Yeah, I mean, you know you're going to get bad reviews. You know, if you stick your head above the parapet, you have enemies that will delight in picking maybe a typo in page 130 or something like that. This is a review by Benito Mussolini, one of Hitler's good personal friends. A boring tome that I've never been able to read. And he called Hitler's views little more than commonplace cliches. With friends like that, I guess. Sally McGrain of The New Yorker wrote, Hitler's 700-page screed is so unreadable that despite its ubiquity during the Third Reich, it is unlikely that most Germans actually cracked the book open. It's full of bombastic, hard-to-follow clauses, historical minutiae, and tangled ideological threads, and both neo-Nazis and serious historians tend to avoid it. So there you are.
Like, for being the top potato at being a horrible person, like, it's really getting panned. I've not read it. Have you read it, Colin?
I haven't read it, no. I've never felt the inclination to do so. What about you, Martin?
I have read most of it. I gave it a good old whack for university. I should make it clear.
What was that, Nazi university?
not for a buzz on a Friday night.
Not for a wee dip in it. It's, I mean, apart from the sentiment being inexorable, it's just dreadful, dreadful writing. It is the thoughts of a maniac. If it was written in shit on the walls, it would make more sense than being published. And you're right, it probably wasn't, it definitely wasn't read. It was probably something that many people in Nazi Germany started to take hold had in their bookshelves, but never get cracked open. A wee bit like Stephen Hawking's books, perhaps, adorn many pseudo-intellectual bookshelves. But it was all in there. His plans were all in there, which means that you don't really have much of a get out later on. So I didn't think it would get quite that bad. He kind of laid it all out in front of the world. It was just hidden in dreadful, dreadful writing. Ian Kershaw, the incredible Nazi historian, that's the historian of Nazis, not a Nazi historian, I guess, wrote a two-part biography of Hitler, Hubris and Nemesis. And again, I had Nemesis to read for a university essay that was due just at the end of term, the December term. But I was going over to New York for a long weekend to meet up with a school friend that was working over there for the year. And I deliberately didn't have an iPod in those days, but CDs, anything like that, any other books, because on this flight to New York, I was going to get cracking into this book, get some serious reading done, some serious notes. This was my time to do it. I was in the back of the plane. There was just two seats, myself and one, and this very, very nervous girl sat beside me, not obviously a great flyer, a bit of snow about, I think. And she was really, really quite anxious before we'd even taken off. And I heard her starting to kind of chunter to herself, and she was certainly speaking, but I couldn't really make out the language. And then she got out this kind of leather book and opened it, and it was all in Hebrew. There was no way I was getting this book out to read because I, socially awkward, couldn't deal with the explanation. Look, I'm reading this academically. I am not a supporter of the guy on the front cover. So it was 8-9 hours, thankfully.
Jesus.
And in-flight entertainment was there. It wasn't quite as incredible as it is now, but I wish I'd taken a few CDs.
Jack, we asked Martin in the previous episode about his favourite book. I'm very intrigued and looking forward to your answer to that question. What would you say was your favourite?
Yeah, don't build it up too much. When I asked myself this question, I realised that I have not read a book twice. You know, I've never went back and reread a book, apart from once by accident. It was an Ian Rankin book that I had read before, didn't realise I had read it before until about three quarters of the way through it. So this was a bit of a tough one for me. A book I read when I was about 18 or 19 was Bill Bryson's A Short History of Nearly Everything. And talking about being a pseudo-intellectual, Martin, I kind of thought I was that when I was that age, but that's probably, I'm a big fan of Bill Bryson, so if I was to pick one book, it would probably be that. Different when it comes to audiobooks, because I've listened to many of them multiple times, and to be honest, one of my favourites is I, Partridge. It's one of the funniest books that I've ever got read to me, so yeah. That would be my choices. Nothing particularly groundbreaking there, to be honest with you. But we're here to speak about planning, I suppose, Martin. So how did you go about planning the book? We sort of covered the how you got there in the last episode, but how did you plan this?
With great naivety, the poll that would give me my 50 games, I started that on May the 1st, and I owned that for the month of May. And I'd already written three sample chapters. It might need a wee bit of tweaking, but they were in the bag, no problem. 1st of June, I was going to start. So I had 47 main chapters and introduction, 48 chapters. I'll nail three a week, two nights, one weekend. I'll get this done in 4 months. That takes me into September, wee bit of tidying up. Off to the publishers, bit of editing, done by October, out for Christmas, jobs are good. I submitted my text on the 1st of February. I had no idea what writing a book was like. Of course, I hadn't. I'd never done it before. And I have a lot of enthusiasm for those sample chapters, and they did come quite freely. And I just stupidly assumed that they all would, but they didn't, clearly. So you do have to have a think about the number of words for a start that you're going to need, and therefore you still need that structure that we talked about first. If that's not in place, you can't drill down into the individual chapters themselves. But that's what caused a bit of delay for me. Just, I would go to bed at night and think, right, I know the game I'm talking about tomorrow. I don't want it just to be a running commentary. What do I want? What does this game tell me? What does the fact that it's been voted so high or lower or whatever tell me? Where's my hook? And I wouldn't start writing until I had it. But being prepared for that delay, being prepared for blocks that we'll come to in a later episode, and protecting your time. What nights or what days, whatever, are you every week going to give to this? Because if it's just going to be an off-the-cuff kind of thing, I'll write when I'm inspired. someone had spoken to me recently about writing a book, and so they get really enthused about a paragraph that came to them in their head, and it's such a rush. Well, it is, but it's not all like that, and we'll come to that in another episode as well. So what are you going to give yourself? What are you going to protect in order to do that? And are you prepared, though, still, when an idea does come, to just do, well, you know, whatever that takes you? I wrote mine in planes and trains and hotels and the other side of the world. Went to Australia and the flight from Glasgow to Dubai, I wrote two chapters, because it's great, because there's not a lot more to do. To speak to my wife, but writing a book was easier. So it was just that kind of protection. And to be fair, I did get very disciplined with that no, it's a Tuesday night or whatever, that's my writing night. Also in the planning, you might have a good deal with your publisher that they'll take care of the cover, and they will do the artwork for you, I'm sure. But if you're using pictures, if it's a non-fiction book, well, they cost money, and they cost quite a bit of money. So what's that cover going to look like? Are you prepared to budget for that? If you are expected to pick up the cost yourself, you know, I had dreams for my book of some kind of big collage with, you know, 9 or 10 images. No chance was that going to really be worthwhile, given how much it would cost. So I went with a single image. Thankfully, it was a really striking one. I was very happy with it. But these kind of things seem like the last thing you do, but should be in the thought process pretty early on.
I have seen the front cover. So that's something, I suppose, and it is an absolutely fantastic picture. When it comes to the actual planning, Martin, myself and Colin, we have big ideas about planning all the time. And even today, half an hour late and starting recording because we couldn't plan right. But did you use a pen and paper? Was it a reminders on your phone? Like, physically, how did you plan?
Blocking off the nights. Right. And because my book was very, very structured, as I said, these 50 chapters, I wrote chronologically. Not chronology, so I wrote in order of the list, so from 50 down to 1, because I wanted to build up that tempo and that sense of drive towards the greater and greater match. So I knew that, but it just doesn't always work. It doesn't always work out like that. So it's been able to deal with the sluggishness, but still kind of powering on. It's a difficult balance to strike. But I'll come to some of those snags in maybe a later episode. But if I just sat down 1st of June and said, well, it'll be ready when it's ready, then I'd probably still be writing it. So what is the deadline? Because my publisher were very good, and I'll talk about a big block I had that did move that deadline for submission. Some might not. They've got other books to get done. They've got other books to edit, other books to get out. So what are you working with here? And that needs to be realistic. We speak about Rangers now, and we were recording in the near the end of this 2021 season. I think there are 3 books that I know of about this remarkable season, and a couple of them are going to have to be turned around very, very quickly. And right, okay, but is it feasible then? Or if your deadline is so strict, you might be able to submit words by that point, but is it the book that you want to write? Because that will be sitting up in your shelf, and you don't want to be looking at that going, it could have been better. It could have been 50,000 words more. It could have gone on, and it could have gone into different avenues and just been fuller. But, you know, I delivered it. Well, is it what you want to actually deliver? So have an idea of how long it takes you to write 1,000 words, and kind of work it. There's a bit of basic maths about that. Sorry to be so reductive, but that's kind of the truth.
Some of the advice that's given out there to would-be or aspiring authors is that if you've just published your first short story, you're still probably 5, maybe 10 years away from having a solid, polished novel that's ready to compete in the marketplace. Martin, it might not have felt that way for you, but I remember the very early stages of you letting us know that you were putting this book together to the book coming out, and it did seem to move pretty quickly for me. It probably felt much longer for you. But in retrospect, you actually started planning this book before you knew you were writing a book, because you'd been working on your show for 3 years on the network. You had your notes to fall back on. You had that little bit of groundwork done that you adapted. Your new book that you've had commissioned, we're not going to go into too many details what it's about or anything, but do you expect that to be a longer process? That's going to take you longer to put together, and it'll maybe take more time?
Yes. Yes, it will, because it isn't as simplistic a structure as what I conveniently arranged for myself the first time. Structurally, my book was a piece of piss, really. And I'm not saying it wrote itself. Of course, it didn't. But what I had there was a very kind of simple idea, and there were so many hooks that I never really got lost too often. I think I've built myself a book architecture for this one that will work. I'm still in the early research stage of that. Haven't actually started writing it, but this is different. This is bigger. It's a bigger project. I hope it will read more like a proper history book. This is the other thing, I guess, in the planning. The name. I was kind of tied to my name because it does what it says in the tin, and that's what it is. But my biggest fear was that name would consign it to your kind of bargain basement stuff or your kind of stocking filler. You see football books like that produced quite a lot, and it is trivia, and it's pretty low rent. And I knew my book wasn't going to be like that, and it isn't like that. But I get why people's first impressions, but I toyed so much with, can I get a title and just use 50 Great Rangers Games as a kind of subtitle? So that's an important part of the planning process as well. For this one, it'll be different. And I've never written a novel. I think that it would be incredible to write one, and I envy anyone who can do that. But I get that there is a build-up to that, and are you really ready to go for the long-form fictional narrative? I'm so sure that this next one will be far better than my first, because I've simply been through the process. And the excitement of doing it isn't quite as overwhelming. I've had that novelty. I'm rereading bits and thinking, that's a wee bit scrappy. I wouldn't word it quite like that anymore. So I'm hopeful that next time will just be a lot more polished, a lot more thorough.
Yeah, so that's all solid advice from Martin. So thanks again for joining us, mate.
Oh, pleasure, mate. Thanks.
Colin, as always.
Cheers.
Right, guys, we will speak to you soon.
Only the best pods in the best network. QuiteTheThingMedia.com.